What is up, y'all? Welcome back to another episode of Surfing the Stream, where every week we're on a quest to find out what is the greatest movie of all time. I am Matt Primo, and we are continuing our review series, Horror in Review, Part 4, where throughout the entire month, we are watching and reviewing possession slash haunting movies. So each and every year, this is the fourth year, we review a different subgenre of horror. We did the best horror of all time. Then we went with the scariest horror of all time. And then we went with, you know, alien horror last year. And then this year we are doing possession slash haunting, which is my favorite subgenre, to be completely honest with you. So definitely looking forward to this entire series. And this week I'm reviewing a movie that I've wanted to review several years ago, back when I first started the podcast, and that is Hereditary. This was a movie that, you know, honestly, this was one of the first movies that I watched that really kind of opened my eyes to the whole review process that we do nowadays. And I say that in the way, what I mean by that is, I used to just watch movies and just enjoy them for what they were, and I never really critiqued them. But when I watched Hereditary, and I'm not saying this was the first movie, but this kind of led me down that path of being a more critical reviewer and actually kind of looking at some of the more finer details within movies. Hereditary was one of those movies. So when we came up with Possession for this particular year, Hereditary, I remember it not. It was weird. It was weird. When you Google it, it shows up as a possession slash haunting movie in that subgenre of horror. But after, like, the first time that I watched it, I don't think I would have ever considered it as a possession or haunting movie. So, you know what? I thought to myself, let's put it in the review category for this year. Let's make it one of the four reviews and give it a proper review, because we have done some of the best horror movies of all time. Not all of them, but some of the best horror movies of all time. And Hereditary should be a part of that conversation. And I think this is, there's no better time than this year. If the internet says it's part of the possession category, then by all means, let's check it out and see if it is a part of that category. So one, we are going to be talking about whether it fits in that category when it's all said and done, and whether this will be considered for the top 10, especially for me in particular. I mean, there's going to be three of us that do the top 10 episode at the end of this month, me, Corey, and Carmen, and we're going to rank our top 10 favorite possession movies. So this discussion will kind of be a part of that, whether we include this in the top 10 or in the discussion to be a part of the top 10. And then on the other hand, number two, I'm going to give you my thoughts and opinions on Hereditary, so we can finally give it its due and give it its time in the sun. So let's go ahead and start off with the plot, the fun facts, and then we'll jump into both of those things as we talk about that and kind of towards the back half of this episode. So the plot: a grieving family is haunted by tragic and disturbing occurrences. This was directed by Ari Aster, who also directed Midsommar and Bo is Afraid, which just came out this year, if I'm not mistaken. Midsommar is another strange movie that I do need to review for the podcast, because this movie in particular, Midsommar, and you can pretty much put any A24 movie in this category, and that is the artistic horror genre. It's its own little genre now, and you know, The Witch kind of started it all, I think, way back in, I think it was 2015 when that movie came out. So A24 just does some weird shit with their movies and the horror genre. So I don't know. Like, you wanna put this in its own little category of art horror, but it's also gotta have a subgenre on top of that, you know? I don't think art horror is technically a subgenre at this point. I mean, you could probably consider it a subgenre. That's up for debate, you know? When you think about it, most directors and reviewers and whatnot, they don't consider art horror as part of like its own little subgenre, because they just consider it making it a good film. So that's kind of my argument against it being a subgenre, but you can make the case for or against. This movie had a budget of $10 million and it grossed $82.8 million. It stars Toni Collette, Millie Shapiro, and Alex Wolff. It has a runtime of 2 hours and 7 minutes, and it was released June 8th, 2018. I have a handful of fun facts for y'all. There was a focus on practical effects rather than special effects done in post-production. Astor wanted to go for more scares that were like emotionally justified rather than relying on jump scares, which is a huge, huge plus in my book. The original cut was 3 hours long. You're sitting there and you're wondering, what the hell could they have added to this movie to make it 3 hours long? Well, apparently it was mostly footage of family dialogue and just kind of developing the family relationship and that aspect of the story. We'll go ahead and knock out the runtime right now while we're on the subject. It's 2 hours and 7 minutes. It is known on Surfing the Stream and especially Horror in Review that I don't believe any horror movie should be over 2 hours long. Now, 7 minutes, is that going to be really that big of a deal? No. But in the grand scheme of things, a 3 hour long horror movie, I'm not down for it. It's so difficult to keep tension and to keep you on the edge of your seat and attention span for over 2.5 hours when it's horror related. You know, Midsommar is a huge, huge example of that, because that movie is over 2.5 hours long. And it loses some of that tension in the movie because it's so damn long. But then at the same time, you kind of think to yourself, well, what exactly would they cut from that movie? And I understand it from that aspect, but for the most part, horror movies, 1 hour and 45 minutes, that is like the sweet spot right there. No longer than 2 hours. If that's just me though. This movie was shot in 32 days. So in this movie, the whole movie is about, you know, Toni Collette's character making like a model house and model renditions of like her family life and whatnot, okay? So the house itself was constructed completely on sets on a soundstage in Utah. And this was done in order to be able to remove walls and ceilings in order to get the shots and to honestly make it look exactly like the miniature renditions of those models and whatnot. This is the fourth A24 film to get a wide release. The other three, The Witch, greatest horror movie of all time. Number three on my all-time favorite list, like all-time movies, any genre whatsoever. Free Fire, which I don't think I've ever seen, so I may need to check that out. And It Comes at Night. It Comes at Night is a fucking great movie. Y'all should definitely go check that out. So what did I think about Hereditary? So like I said, this is the second viewing of this movie. I liked it a lot the first time that I watched it. And I was super interested in reviewing this movie because I wanted to see just how much, like, what would it change? How would it change my opinion, whether that be negatively or positively? Because I typically have at least a 2-watch rule on a majority of movies. Now, if I watch it and I just absolutely fucking just cannot stand that movie, it does not get 2 watches for me, okay? But, like, The Witch is the perfect example of this. I had to watch The Witch probably about 4 times before I truly just absolutely fell in love with that movie. When I watched it for the 4th time, that was when it shot up to top 10 all time for me. It was just like that movie just fucking clicked for me. And a lot of movies are like that for me. It takes multiple watches, whether that be because, you know, the time that you watch it, you know, the mindset that you're in, the time of day, night, whatever's going on around you, whether your kids are being hooligans in the next room or the room that you're watching it in, it matters what environment you're watching these movies in. Another good example is The Green Knight, which I fucking love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. I saw it in theaters, hyped as fuck for it, but I watched it right after I got off work, and I had gotten fucked stupid that day, not in a good way, and I pretty much fell asleep through a majority of that movie. But when I watched it again, it was like, oh fuck, I don't know why. I didn't fall asleep because of the movie itself. I fell asleep because I was just fucking exhausted. So, two movie watch typically. So I was super excited to jump into this time and give it, I don't know if I'd say it would be the last straw or whatever, because I'm pretty sure I'd watch it again even after a second time. I didn't think that I would drastically change, especially negatively, to prevent me from watching it a third time. But I will say this. I like it a little bit more than the first time that I watched it. I can see why people really, really love this movie and why it connected with a lot of people. And it's mainly because this film kind of reinvented what a horror movie can or should be. You know, this is art horror. This is a completely different genre or style of horror movies that I don't think we were ever really prepared for. Now, The Witch kind of kickstarted it, but Hereditary kind of pushed it into the mainstream, I think. So I will say that I think The Witch ultimately changed horror more so than, honestly, I would put up there as one of the most influential horror movies of all time. Because if you don't have The Witch and A24, then you don't have Hereditary, I don't think. Because this came out several years after The Witch. You don't get Hereditary, and then you don't get that movement of art horror. So I think when you look back on this movie, you know, 10, 15, 20 plus years from now, this will be one of the more influential horror movies of all time. I mean, look at it. Nightmare on Elm Street. You look at Friday the 13th, Halloween. Probably Halloween is probably more influential than either of those two movies. But then you got The Exorcist. You just got so many horror movies that are just really just changed the genre itself. And this movie did that. And yes, I don't think that it is one of the best horror movies of all time. This is not in my top 10 by any means. And I don't think it's even close. I want to say that I ranked it on my all-time horror list, and it was like 35 or some shit like that. So this is not close to being any, like, in terms of being like one of my favorite horror movies of all time, not even close. But I understand the influence that it is creating and kind of just spreading out on the horror genre itself. Like, I'm not oblivious to that. I'm not stupid to think that this movie isn't influential in that regard. But I really, really do enjoy this movie. I don't think I enjoy it quite as much as I think I should, because honestly, there are some great performances in this. Some great performances. There's lots of scenes, and a lot of the notes that I have is this scene is great, fucking great acting. Like that, those are my notes for a majority of this movie, and that is what you're gonna get when you pop this movie in or click on it, you know, for streaming and whatnot. You're gonna get great acting. This movie, if I had to describe it, if you're listening to this and you have never seen Hereditary before, and you wanted to know, okay, what should I expect when going into this movie? Atmosphere. This is a very atmospheric style horror movie. Now, we'll jump into the subgenre of whether or not it fits into the possession horror genre itself, subgenre. But it is very atmospheric. I don't want to say it's very slow. It's slower and more methodical than most horror movies. There are moments in this movie that you kind of forget that it is even a horror movie, honestly. It's more of a suspenseful family drama for the first two-thirds of the movie. And in the last act, that's when the horror really kicks in. And to me, what is really, really great about this movie is how this movie just slowly builds and you don't even know it. And what I mean by that is the movie starts off and it's just, you feel the tension, you feel that atmosphere. It's not necessarily scaring you every 5 seconds, but it's more of the tone of the movie is, has that scary vibe to it, that horror vibe to it. And then as the movie slowly progresses, you start to get more anxious. You start to get a little bit, you know, you start to scoot off your seat a little bit, scoot to the edge. And then when it hits that last act, it's like, holy shit, this movie kind of just switched gears on me. And I think that's one of the best things about the movie itself is that slower build. And regardless of what you go into horror movies for, whether you should be scared 24/7, whether you go in for jump scares, I think most people could enjoy this movie for what it is. Not even just the horror genre itself. Like, if you went into this movie and you're like, I just want to watch a good to great movie, I don't think you're going to be wrong by watching this. Now, I will say this. With all that being said, okay, the slow build up to really the horrific style finale, okay, it is a little jarring as well. So if I'm going into this as a non-horror fan, then it's a little jarring. Like, it just, like, let's say I did not know anything about this movie going into it, and someone just said, this is a great family drama that has a lot of suspense, maybe some horror elements in it. Okay. You get to that last act, that third act, and it's like, holy shit, did I just change movies? So it is a little jarring that it changes up like that. But if you think about it and you pay attention to the clues, which I didn't on the first time that I watched it, but the second time, I kind of caught on to what they were kind of alluding to and kind of hinting at. And it's not as jarring as one would think. But regardless, it goes from like a 7. No, nah, I take that back. It goes from like a 5 to a 10 in the span of just a couple of minutes in this movie. That's what I'm talking about in terms of, it's kind of jarring just how quickly it does change in that third act. And to that point, expectations are a huge key to horror movies, I think. If you are expecting something and you get that expectation, it's not as scary. That's why jump scares to me are garbage. They're just cheap scares. That's really all they are. I, for the most part, dislike any type of jump scare. There's only a few movies out there that really get me with the jump scares. It's just, I don't like it. Because most of the time, you can kind of figure out when they're going to do it. And then the other times, it's mainly when, you know, I was watching The Exorcist. I'll use The Exorcist as an example. It's this quiet scene, and then it automatically just immediately ends and then cuts to the little girl screaming. And they amped up the volume so loud that it scares the shit out of you. And to me, that's cheap. That tells me you're not really thinking about, okay, how can we do this smart? How can we make good decisions to scare people and kind of play with those expectations? And this movie does that very, very well, I think. Because I think that you're expecting one thing, and I'll use the example of the scene, okay? One of the most shocking scenes in any movie ever. The movie is, you know, slowly going along. It's towards the first act. And they're driving home, okay? The tension has been building up to this point where they've kind of dropped little nuggets about her having this anaphylactic reaction to peanuts, right? And the dude's just trying to get laid, man. That's really all he wants. And old girl just doesn't really want his dick. She just kind of wants his weed, to be honest with you. And then the sister starts eating some cake, and she's kind of cock-blocking him and whatnot. So it's kind of like playing with your expectations a little bit, right? The family drama comes in there. And then he puts her in a car, and he drives. And he's going to the hospital, right? And you're like, oh, shit. Like, this is very, very tense. Like, I'm on the edge of my seat. What's going to happen to this girl? Are they going to get to the hospital in time? And, you know, she reaches out the window to start grabbing some, like, fresh air and whatnot. And you're like, okay, like, that makes sense. And then he hits the fucking sign, and beheads her. And you're like, holy fucking shit. I was not expecting that. Great, great horror moment in this movie. And it is one of the best horror moments in any horror movie ever. Very, very well drawn up scene there, I think. From the acting, from Alex Wolff, the look is everything to me. The look. He never looks back to see that she is dead. Okay? He hears it happen. He never looks in the rear view. He just stares off into the forward. Never looks back. And he just fucking knows that his sister is probably dead. Something bad happened. And he just can't look back. So to me, the acting in that scene is just, it's phenomenal. Really, really phenomenal. And it's mostly with nonverbal cues. Like you're looking at facial expressions and shit like that. And to me, that's when you know that you have a good actor or a good scene, is when they can do the acting without talking. That is a good sign of acting to me. Other notables in this movie, I really love the acting from Toni Collette. She is on fucking fire with this movie, okay? Alex Wolff, he has a couple of moments here or there that's not as good. It's mainly when he's trying to cry and shit. But for the most part, he handles those scenes very, very well. It's just like little moments here and there that I'm just like, eh, you could have done a little bit better, dude. But the acting from beginning to end is just really, really great. The dad, I liked his arc a lot because he's trying to be the stoic figure for the family that they can kind of lean on. And he's trying to be strong for them. And he just lost his daughter. And then towards the end of the movie, he just breaks down in the car for just a few minutes. And then he just starts driving again and he's all better. And he's been kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? He's been kind of enabling his wife the entire movie. And then towards the end, she's just like, hey, let's do this. Like, go up there. And he's like, I'm done. Okay. Like, you need help. You're having a psychotic break. And he's just fucking done. So I love the character arc, being the stoic father figure throughout the entire movie, being there for his wife. And he plays along with and kind of enables her throughout this entire movie. Then he has that moment of breakdown in the car. And then at the very end, that's when he says, enough is enough. And then the dude fucking dies. It's just like a great arc. Okay, great, great arc. Toni Collette, absolute monster in this movie. The dinner scene, fucking phenomenal. Fantastic acting from her and Alex Wolff in that scene. It's just like the back and forth between the two, the trading jabs and the blame, was just handled very, very well. Very, very well. And then there was the support group scene as well, which was really, really good. I thought it was a long take scene, but they kind of broke it up a little bit. But I think Toni Collette's acting in that scene is really fucking good. It's almost kind of like she improv'd that entire scene to me. And it's really important in the grand scheme of things because it sets up that family history of kind of mental health issues with how she explains what's going on with her family and whatnot. So they just do lots of things with little scenes here or there. And it really propels and kind of develops those characters and the story as you make your way through the film. And then the last thing I want to say before I jump into the possession subgenre of it, that is the shooting, okay? The cinematography, the way they shoot the movie, the camera angles are absolutely magnificent. How they, essentially, like I said earlier, they created the house to look like the miniatures, the models, and they could just do the camera angles like that. They could just drop it down into one bedroom and zoom in. I think a lot of the directing in this is masterful, okay? And then at the very beginning of the movie, I love that slow zoom out shot at the very beginning. It turns inside the dollhouse and then goes into the real room. And for the most part, they do that a lot in the entire movie. But the zooming in and out is just, it's just fucking fantastic, okay? I absolutely love when I can catch those types of things in movies. That shit, it makes me diamond status, man. Makes me fucking diamond status. So, overall, really, really enjoyed this movie. I think it's a great movie. Great horror movie. I give it 4 stars. Okay? Like I said, I think it's going to end up being... I think it was number 35 on my all-time favorite list of horror movies. It won't make my top 100 by any means, but like my all-time favorite, any genre whatsoever. But I think it's like in the 30s in terms of horror movies that I've watched. So now we jump into whether or not this is a possession slash haunting movie. I was curious about it jumping into this movie. And there, look, is this a quote-unquote possession movie all the way through? I don't think it is. But it has possession in it, so I'm going to include it in my official rankings for possession slash horror. I don't think this was a bad idea to review this movie for this subgenre, because I ultimately it does fit, okay? There is possession. They're trying to transfer bodies and spirits and the fucking demon or whatever the fuck into Alex Wolff's character. So there is a form of possession in this movie. There's even haunting. I mean, you could consider it haunting throughout, for sure. So, to me, it fits the subgenre. Is it a slam dunk 100%? When you think of possession movies, you think about Hereditary. I wouldn't go so far as to say that. But when you think about it, it does have possession. It does have haunting. So I would include it in my final rankings. So I don't think this was a bad choice overall to have this movie reviewed for this series. So guys, 4 stars. I recommend go and check it out. Honestly, I would buy it. $10. I think that's a good price for this movie. $7 to $10 anywhere in there. If you can get it on sale, that'd be great. But I think this is going to be when it's all set. I guess when I say it's all said and done, like they're ever going to stop making horror movies. When we look back on this movie 20 years from now, this will be one of the most influential horror movies ever made. Mark it down, okay? Book it. Book it. So yeah, I would recommend people go check this out. Let me know in the comments below if you think this movie was worth your time, or if this movie is even a part of the subgenre possession slash haunting. So it's going to be curious, guys. End of the month, top 10 possession horror movies of all time. I'm doing it with Corey and Carmen. It's going to be a great fucking episode. Great fucking episode. I am stoked to... honestly, I'm almost done reviewing all these movies. But I'm still watching all the horror movies that I can in preparation of this top 10. So, yeah. Let me know in the comments below if there's a movie that you would want us to check out for the top 10 episode. One that we're kind of missing. But yeah, guys, we appreciate y'all supporting us. And I will catch y'all next time on another episode. Laters.